Welcome to The Deep Dive, where we slice through complex information and distill it down to the most important nuggets of knowledge for you. Today, we're plunging into a truly fascinating case. Penske Automotive Group, Inc., or PEG. If you think you know car dealerships, get ready to reconsider. PEG is far more intricate and strategically positioned than, you know, a traditional auto retailer.
Indeed. We get a detailed investment analysis right here. And our mission for this deep dive is really to extract the core insights. We want to see whether PEG's current market valuation adequately captures its inherent strengths, and maybe more importantly, how it's actively navigating a truly transformative industry. The automotive sector, as we all know, is facing some monumental structural disruption right now.
Okay, let's unpack this then. We're going to dissect PEG's incredibly diversified structure and then examine how they're not just surviving, but, well, maybe even thriving amidst these huge industry shifts, things like the rise of electric vehicles, evolving sales models. We'll dive into their financial health, their strategic plays, and ultimately what this all means for their long-term value proposition. I mean, this is a company built on three distinct, pretty powerful pillars: a global network of retail automotive dealerships, a significant and maybe often overlooked commercial truck business, and a substantial equity stake in a logistics powerhouse, Penske Transportation Solutions.
Yeah, and what's truly fascinating here, something we'll keep coming back to, is the central tension. On one side, you have this high-quality, exceptionally well-managed operator. I mean, a company really known for its execution. But this operator is embedded in an industry facing profound, almost existential structural disruption. EVs, new direct-to-consumer sales models, shifts in consumer behavior. It's all happening. Our goal here is to understand precisely how PEG's unique blend of assets acts as a deliberate hedge against these challenges. How it provides a level of resilience and stability that, frankly, pure-play auto retailers just don't possess. This structural advantage, I think, is the core insight that really separates PEG.
So we've laid out these three foundational pillars. Let's break them down individually, maybe starting with the most familiar one for most of us. The retail automotive dealerships. This is, of course, PEG's largest segment, this global network of franchise dealerships. But the revenue generated isn't simply about selling new cars, is it? It seems like a much more layered and nuanced financial model than many people realize.
Oh, far from it. The revenue model for these dealerships is highly multifaceted. It goes well beyond just the initial new vehicle sale. While new vehicle sales undeniably represent the largest chunk of PEG's revenue, they actually carry relatively thin gross margins, especially in competitive market, you know. Used vehicle sales, on the other hand, often provide a higher gross margin per unit. That makes them a crucial, and maybe often overlooked, component of the overall profit picture for a dealership. Dealers just have more flexibility in pricing and sourcing used inventory, and that translates directly to healthier margins.
Okay, here's where it gets particularly interesting for the business model, I think. And it's an area that most people maybe don't fully appreciate when they think about a car dealership's bottom line. Finance and insurance, or F&I. This seems to be a surprisingly powerful profit driver.
Absolutely critical and, yeah, often underestimated. F&I is a disproportionately large contributor to overall dealership profitability. And the reason is that revenue flows almost entirely to the gross profit line, with very little associated cost. This segment includes a whole range of services, arranging financing for customers, facilitating lease agreements, and selling a suite of ancillary products. Think extended service contracts, which cover repairs beyond the manufacturer's warranty, maintenance plans, offering prepaid routine services, GAP insurance.
Right. That covers the difference if your car gets totaled and you owe more than it's worth.
Exactly. And various other insurance and protection products. These are really high-margin offerings that add significant value for the customer, sure, but they also boost the dealership's bottom line substantially.
And then we have what's often referred to as fixed operations, parts and service. This sounds like the engine that truly drives that long-term recurring revenue and stability for dealerships.
Yeah, this is arguably the most valuable and defensively positioned part of the traditional dealership model. And it's certainly PEG's, well, secret weapon, maybe. The parts and service segment generates high-margin recurring revenue. And it's notably less cyclical than vehicle sales. I mean, whether the economy is booming or busting, cars still need maintenance, tires, oil changes, repairs.
Uh-huh.
For PEG, approximately half of its entire gross profit across all its segments is derived from this business. That includes customer-paid repairs, warranty work the manufacturer pays for, collision repairs, and even wholesale parts sales to independent repair shops. This stable, high-margin foundation provides a crucial buffer during economic downturns or periods of sales volatility, It essentially insulates a significant portion of the company's profitability. It's a core reason for PEG's resilience, really.
Okay, moving beyond the consumer car market. This is a key differentiator for PAG, their premier truck group, or PTG. It's one of the largest commercial truck retailers in North America. What's distinct about this segment compared to the retail auto business? How does it fit into PAG's overall diversification strategy?
Well, its market drivers are fundamentally different from the consumer auto market. And that's precisely why it's such a valuable diversifier. Demand for heavy and medium-duty commercial trucks, it's influenced by broad macroeconomic factors, things like freight tonnage and rates, overall industrial production, and often regulatory cycles.
Regulatory cycles, like emission standards.
Exactly. New emission standards can actually pull forward replacement demand as trucking companies need to upgrade their fleets to meet these new, stricter environmental requirements. PTG primarily represents robust, industry-leading brands like Freightliner and Western Star, catering to a B2B clientele. This means their demand isn't tied to individual consumer discretionary spending, but rather to the health of the broader industrial and logistics economy. It's a different beast entirely.
And we've seen this segment performing really strongly, right? Providing a tangible hedge for the overall company's earnings profile.
Precisely. The Premier Truck Group has consistently achieved record earnings before taxes in recent periods. It offers a significant and measurable counterbalance to the inherent volatility of the consumer auto market. So when consumer auto sales might be facing headwinds from, say, higher interest rates or economic uncertainty, this B2B-focused business can often thrive, reflecting those different underlying economic drivers. It really showcases the strategic power of PEG's diversification. Different business cycles providing natural offsets.
And then there's this third layer of diversification, mainly operating down in Australia and New Zealand. This sounds like a truly global reach for a company that, you know, started as a local dealership.
Indeed. This segment involved the distribution of commercial vehicles, powerful diesel and gas engines, and various power systems for brands like Western Star Trucks and Man Truck and Bus. It's a strategic move that gives PAG exposure to entirely different end markets, including robust off-highway applications like mining and construction, and crucially, different geographic regions with distinct economic cycles. This just further insulates the company from over-reliance on any single market or economic environment. It broadens its base and reduces that concentrated risk.
Now, what truly stands out in PAG's retail auto strategy, and you touched on this, is this deliberate concentration in premium and luxury brands. It's not just accidental, is it? It feels like a very intentional core strategic choice that drives a lot of their advantages.
No, it's absolutely a cornerstone of their strategy and a key differentiator. Premium brands accounted for approximately 73% of PAG's worldwide automotive dealership revenue recently. That's a huge majority. This active strategic choice offers several profound advantages that really set them apart from many other dealership groups who might cater to a broader mass market audience.
And what are those specific advantages? What makes focusing on luxury so powerful for their business model?
Well, there are three main interconnected benefits, I'd say. First, just plain higher profitability. Luxury vehicles command higher transaction prices and, crucially, higher gross profit per unit compared to mass market brands. So more profit per sale. Fundamentally.
Yeah.
Second, a more resilient consumer base. The affluent demographic that typically buys luxury vehicles has historically shown greater resilience during economic downturns. Their purchasing decisions are often less sensitive to interest rate changes or modest economic contractions. This provides a degree of stability and predictability that, frankly, competitors focused on non-luxury brands don't share as much. It means more consistent demand.
Right.
And third, stronger brand equity. Powerful luxury brands like Mercedes-Benz, Porsche, BMW, or Ferrari. They often have more pricing power and command greater customer loyalty due to their prestige and exclusivity. This benefits both new vehicle sales and, perhaps even more importantly, that high-margin service business. Luxury car owners tend to stick to manufacturer-specified service schedules and use authorized dealerships. And that recent acquisition of a Ferrari dealership in northern Italy, Modena. That's a clear testament to this deeply ingrained, lucrative segment strategy. You don't get much more high-end than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this 28.9% ownership in Penske Transportation Solutions, or PTS, it feels like a bit of a hidden gem within CAG's portfolio, almost a quiet powerhouse behind the scenes that maybe many listeners aren't even aware of.
It absolutely is. And PTS isn't just a participant. It's a leader in things like full-service truck leasing, contract maintenance, truck rentals, and comprehensive logistics services. This equity stake provides a substantial and relatively stable stream of earnings for PAG, which they account for using the equity method. In 2023, this steak contributed an impressive $289.5 million in earnings to PAG.
Wow.
Now, okay, that figure moderated somewhat from the record highs of 2022. Those were boosted by an exceptionally strong used truck market and surging freight demand post-pandemic, but remains a vital, high-quality contributor to PAG's pre-tax income. It's an asset that just throws off significant stable cash.
So what does this all mean for the bigger picture, for PAG's overall business model and its value proposition to investors or anyone looking at the company?
It means PAG has significant, diversified exposure to the B2B logistics and fleet management sectors. And these are sectors driven by powerful, long-term secular trends. Things like the continued explosive growth of e-commerce, the increasing complexity of global supply chains, and the ongoing need for businesses to optimize their transportation networks. This further diversifies PAG's earnings completely away from the consumer auto cycle. It adds another robust layer of stability and growth potential that's distinct and relatively uncorrelated with its other operations. Think of it as a strategic bet on the backbone of modern commerce, really.
So PAYS isn't just diversified in what it sells, but where. They're truly global, US, UK, Germany, Italy, Australia, and more. This geographic spread must be a deliberate part of their risk mitigation strategy, right?
Precisely. This global footprint is a crucial aspect of their risk management. For instance, looking at Q1 2025, North America accounted for about 59.4% of PAG's revenue, the UK for 30.6%, and other international markets for 10.0%. This distribution significantly mitigates risks associated with economic weakness or localized regulatory changes in any single country or region. If one market experiences a slowdown, others can potentially pick up the slack, evening out the overall financial performance.
But operating globally also introduces complexities, doesn't it? Like navigating different regulatory environments or dealing with currency fluctuations, that must add challenges.
Yes, that's absolutely true. They definitely face exposure to foreign currency exchange rate fluctuations, which can impact reported earnings when they translate those international results back to U.S. dollars. And there's also the need to navigate disparate regulatory landscapes, which can vary widely from country to country. Labor laws, environmental regs, franchise law. However, these challenges also come with strategic advantages. For example, the agency sales model, a significant structural shift for auto retail that we'll definitely discuss more, has progressed faster and been more widely adopted in Europe. This has given PAG direct, invaluable operational experience with it through their Mercedes-Benz UK dealerships.
Ah, okay, so they've already seen it in action.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This early experience could be a significant competitive advantage as this model is considered for other major markets, including potentially the U.S. down the road. They've essentially gained a head start on a fundamental industry transformation. It's not theoretical for them. It's operational reality in a big chunk of their business.
So if you had to distill the essence of PAG's business structure into a single compelling idea, what would it be? What's the ultimate takeaway on this meticulously constructed, multifaceted foundation?
I'd say it's a carefully constructed portfolio, designed explicitly for resilience and durability. Think of it this way. In a rapidly changing automotive world where traditional dealerships are under threat, PAG isn't just diversifying its revenue, it's fundamentally de-risking its entire earnings profile. The consumer-facing auto business, which is most exposed to those secular threats of electrification and evolving sales models, is expertly balanced by the B2B-focused commercial truck business. In that segment, electrification is proceeding at a much slower, more predictable pace, just due to technological and infrastructural hurdles and the sheer scale of the vehicles. You know?
Right. Makes sense.
And this is further buttressed by the non-retail logistics exposure from the PTS investment, which rides that secular wave of e-commerce and supply chain demand. This isn't just three revenue streams, it's three distinct economic cycles that rarely move in perfect lockstep. That creates an inherent, measurable stability that most pure-play retailers simply don't possess. That's the core insight here. PAG is structurally built to absorb shocks and deliver more consistent earnings in a volatile industry. It's a deliberate design.
Okay, we've now really dissected PAG's meticulously engineered foundation, these powerful, diversified pillars that provide, as you said, a deliberate hedge against uncertainty. But no company operates in a vacuum, right? Especially not one in an industry undergoing such a radical shakeup. The true test of this diversified model lies in how it performs when confronted with these seismic shifts happening across the entire automotive landscape. Let's pivot now to those powerful forces and see how PAG is not just reacting, but actively shaping its response. First, maybe, how does PAG stat up against its biggest competitors, the other large publicly traded dealership groups?
Right, so PAG operates alongside other prominent players in this fragmented auto retail market. You've got AutoNation, AIN, Lithia Motors, LAD, and Group One Automotive, GPI, as the main public comps. While all of them use the traditional franchise model and are actively consolidating the industry, their strategies and, consequently, their financial profiles show key differences. Lithia, for example, often cited as the largest by unit sales, pursues a very aggressive growth through acquisition strategy. They're rapidly consolidating dealerships across a wide range of markets, including smaller rural ones, with a pretty balanced brand portfolio spanning mass market to luxury.
Okay, sort of a bigger is better approach.
Kind of, yeah. AutoNation, on the other hand, is heavily concentrated in the U.S., particularly the high-growth Sunbelt region. And they've notably invested significantly in their standalone used vehicle brands, like AutoNation USA. Group One Automotive also has a notable international presence, much like PAG, but its brand portfolio is generally more diversified across both luxury and non-luxury segments compared to PAG's heavy luxury skew.
So how does PAG truly distinguish itself amidst these powerful rivals? What's its unique blend that sets it apart, maybe in terms of resilience or profitability?
Well, PAG clearly stands out with its strategic, very pronounced focus on the premium and luxury segments. We've already highlighted that as a core identity. But beyond that, its significant commercial truck operations through Premier Truck Group and that unique and substantial equity investment in Penske Transportation Solutions. Those truly make its business mix fundamentally different from any of its publicly traded peers.
Mm-hmm.
So while Lithia is growing incredibly fast, their sort of land grab strategy with a broad brand portfolio means they might face greater sensitivity to economic downturns or just general consumer affordability issues.
Right, more exposure to the mass market.
Yeah, exactly. PAG, by contrast, with its 73% premium brand mix, is deliberately targeting a more affluent, arguably more recession-resistant customer base.
Mm-hmm.
AutoNation, heavily U.S. Sunbelt-focused, might ride those demographic trends, but that regional concentration also means greater exposure if, say, that region's economy faces specific headwinds. PAG's global spread acts as a natural buffer there. And while Group One shares PAG's international presence, PAG's specific asset mix, the Premier Truck Group, and that PTS stake makes its business model fundamentally more diversified away from the consumer auto cycle than any of its direct peers. It's not just different. It's a strategically more resilient different, I would argue.
And the numbers seem to bear this out, don't they? We can see it when we compare their financial profiles directly.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at trailing 12 months data, PAG's market cap is around $11.1 billion, with TTM revenue of $30.6 billion. Its geographic mix is about 58% U.S., with that critical 73% premium brand mix. And critically, PAG has a price-to-earnings ratio, P.E. ratio, around 11.7x. That's generally higher than its peers, who often trade more in the 8-11x range.
Okay, so the market's paying a bit more for PAG's earnings.
It suggests the market attributes a higher quality to PAG's earnings. But interestingly, it also boasts a significantly more robust forward dividend yield of 3.15%. That reflects a distinct and, frankly, more shareholder-friendly capital return philosophy compared to some competitors who may have lower or even no dividends. This comparison really highlights PAG's premium valuation, likely due to its higher quality, more resilient earnings stream, and its consistent capital return policy.
Okay. Beyond direct competition, there are these powerful secular trends sweeping across the entire automotive industry, fundamentally reshaping its future. Let's start with consolidation. That seems to be a continuous, undeniable force.
Oh, definitely. The U.S. auto retail market is still remarkably fragmented. I mean, just to put in perspective, the top 10 dealership groups combined control less than 10% of the roughly 17,000 dealerships nationwide.
Wow, less than 10% for the top 10. That's surprising.
It is. And this highly fragmented environment inherently favors large, well-capitalized players like PAG and its peers. They can achieve significant economies of scale in areas like marketing, technology infrastructure, HR, back office functions. Things smaller, independent dealers often struggle to invest in sufficiently to compete effectively. That's what drives the ongoing consolidation.
And PAG has been actively capitalizing on this trend, right? They're not just observing it, they're participating quite aggressively, it seems.
Indeed. PAG has been a disciplined yet aggressive consolidator. They aren't just acquiring dealerships indiscriminately, though. They selectively acquire groups that align precisely with their premium brand and geographic strategy. For instance, that $1 billion acquisition of the Rybrook Group in the UK in early 2024, adding 15 premium dealerships. That's a prime example of this methodical, strategic approach. This contrasts perhaps to the more rapid, high-volume, sometimes less targeted acquisition strategies of some competitors. It demonstrates PEG's focus on quality and strategic fit over sheer volume. They're buying what enhances their core advantages.
Okay, now for maybe the biggest elephant in the room. The electric vehicle, or EV, transition. It's a massive, undeniable shift presenting both, well, existential threats to traditional business models and significant, if challenging, opportunities for dealerships. What's the core threat here for PAG?
The core threat is indeed to the high-margin service and parts business. Mm-hmm. And as we discussed, that accounts for roughly half of PAG's gross profit. It's the bedrock of dealership profitability. EVs just have far fewer moving parts than internal combustion engine, ICE vehicles. They require no oil changes, no spark plug replacements, and experience significantly less wear on components like brake pads, thanks to regenerative braking.
Right.
This means substantially less routine maintenance, and that directly endangers that recurring, stable revenue stream that dealerships have historically relied upon so heavily. For a pure-play ICE dealership, this is a truly fundamental challenge to their profit engine.
But you mentioned opportunity. Mm-hmm. Where does that come in? How can EVs paradoxically actually benefit a dealer like PAG?
Well, while the frequency of service visits is expected to decline for EVs, the complexity and the cost of EV repairs are proving to be substantially higher. Servicing high-voltage battery systems, intricate thermal management systems, or sophisticated software that controls nearly every aspect of the vehicle, mm-hmm. it requires highly specialized training, often directly from the manufacturer. And, critically, it requires very expensive diagnostic equipment. Data from PAG itself is quite telling here. It indicates that the average repair order for a battery electric vehicle is approximately $1,300.
Compared to
just $700 for an internal combustion engine vehicle. So nearly double.
Okay, so a classic barbell effect then. The low-value, high-frequency stuff disappears, but it's replaced by high-value, low-frequency, complex repairs. How does that ultimately play out for PAG?
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. The low-value, high-frequency maintenance, like your routine oil changes, largely disappears.
Mm-hmm.
But it's replaced by high-value, low-frequency, complex repairs that demand significant expertise. This dynamic strongly favors large, well-capitalized franchise dealers like PEG. They have the financial capacity and, frankly, the strategic foresight to make the necessary substantial investments in specialized training for their technicians and the cutting-edge equipment required. Over time, this could allow them to capture a larger share of the most profitable, complex repair work, potentially taking significant market share from smaller, independent repair shops that are unable or unwilling to adapt and invest in these new, expensive capabilities. PEG's scale becomes a huge competitive advantage here.
Okay, shifting gears slightly, there's another fundamental challenge to the traditional dealer model, the direct-to-consumer or DTC and agency model threat. Tesla obviously pioneered DTC, but what about this agency model that seems to be gaining traction with the legacy automakers?
Right. The DTC model, as pioneered by Tesla and used by newer EV-centric manufacturers like Rivian and Lucid, completely bypasses dealerships. The manufacturer owns the sales, service, and financing processes directly with the customer. Now, franchise laws in many U.S. states protect existing dealers from their legacy OEM partners adopting that specific model outright, at least for now. But the agency model is a more immediate and widespread shift for those established legacy manufacturers. We're seeing it particularly in Europe, and increasingly it's being discussed and piloted in North America.
And how does that agency model work in practice? What's the fundamental difference from the traditional way of selling cars?
So in the agency structure, the dealer no longer actually owns the vehicle inventory. Instead, they act as an agent for the manufacturer. They facilitate test drives, assist customers with the often digital sales process, and handle the final vehicle delivery. And for this, they receive a fixed commission or fee per vehicle.
Ah, so they don't own the car, they just get a fee for the service.
Exactly. Crucially, the manufacturer controls the pricing, the terms of sale, and the transaction directly with the customer, usually online. And as we mentioned, PEG is already operating under this model for its Mercedes-Benz dealerships in the UK. This gives them invaluable first-hand experience with this evolving structure. It's not theoretical for them. It's already a reality and a significant part of their international operations.
How does this fundamentally change the financial picture for a dealer like PEG? It sounds like it could dramatically alter their revenue and profit streams, maybe even their accounting.
Oh, it dramatically alters the financial profile, and it's a significant shift for analysts and investors to understand. Imagine a car that sells for, say, $40,000. In the traditional model, PEG books that entire $40,000 as revenue, even though a large portion of it, obviously, goes to the manufacturer's cost of goods sold.
Right.
But under the agency model, they might only book, say, a $1,000 fixed fee for facilitating that same sale. So if they sell the exact same number of cars, their reported revenue could appear to plummet by 97.5% or something similar in the initial accounting.
Wow, okay, that looks bad on the surface.
It looks dramatic, yeah. But it's not necessarily that the business is shrinking, it's that the accounting changes drastically. Now, on one hand, this significantly reduces working capital requirements for the dealership. They don't need as much cash tied up in inventory. And it eliminates floor plan interest expense because they're not borrowing to hold those cars.
Okay, that's a positive.
It is. However, it also caps the potential gross profit on new vehicle sales. It removes the dealer's ability to earn higher margins during periods of high demand or scarcity when they might mark cars up. This means investors and you as a listener need to look beyond that top line revenue number. You have to focus instead on things like gross profit generation, particularly from F&I and service, which are unaffected. And maybe most importantly, metrics like return on invested capital or ROIC become even more critical because the dealership is using far less of its own capital to facilitate the sale. It's a fundamental recalibration of what growth and profitability look like for these businesses. Revenue becomes less meaningful.
Got it. So with all these industry shifts, the changing competitive landscape, the profound EV transition, these new challenging sales models, how has PAG's financial performance actually held up? What does their revenue and margin trajectory tell us about their resilience through all this?
Well, PAG's performance over the past few years really reflects a business successfully navigating the normalization from those, frankly, unprecedented market conditions of the post-pandemic era. Remember, that saw vehicle scarcity and massively inflated margins. For the full year 2023, revenue increased a respectable 6% to $29.5 billion. And in the first half of 2025, we saw a modest but steady 1% increase, reaching a record $15.3 billion. This top-line stability, however, kind of masks some very important and positive underlying trends within their segments, particularly the strength of their diversified approach.
Okay, what's the key story behind those numbers then, especially when we look at same-store sales? That strips out the impact of acquisitions, right?
Exactly. Same-store sales data reveals that the resilient parts and service segment has been a consistent and really powerful engine of growth for PAG. This high-margin business has shown remarkable consistency, delivering high single-digit revenue increases specifically between 7% and 9% throughout 2023 and into 2024. This strength has been absolutely crucial in offsetting the softening trends we've seen in new and used vehicle revenue. Those have faced headwinds from normalizing prices, increased vehicle inventory coming back online, and higher financing costs impacting consumer affordability. It truly highlights the defensive nature of that recurring service revenue stream.
And what about vehicle gross profit per unit, or GPU? That was a huge story during the pandemic shortages. With GPUs hitting historic highs, has that completely normalized, or are they still benefiting somehow from those elevated levels?
Right. So after reaching those historic highs during the 2021-2022 semiconductor shortage, GPUs have indeed been normalizing. As vehicle inventory levels have recovered, and competition has inevitably increased. For example, in Q4 2023, same-store new vehicle gross profit declined by 2%, and used vehicle gross profit fell by a more significant 21% from their peaks. However, and this is critical, despite these declines, GPUs remain significantly elevated compared to pre-pandemic levels. In Q4 2024, the new vehicle GPU was nearly $2,000 higher than it was back in 2019 before all the supply chain chaos.
Okay, so still way above historical norms.
Way above. So while they've come down from the absolute peaks, they're still operating at a very strong and profitable level. It indicates that some of that pandemic-era pricing power has perhaps endured, maybe due to consolidation or changing consumer behavior.
What's really telling about their diversified model, I think, is the overall gross margin stability. Despite all these moving parts, softening vehicle sales, normalizing GPUs, inflationary pressures, their overall gross margins have been remarkably consistent. That's a powerful testament to their strategy, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is perhaps the most compelling quantitative evidence of the effectiveness of their diversified business model. Despite the significant volatility and normalization we just talked about in vehicle GPUs, PAG's overall gross margin has been exceptionally stable. It's held in a really tight range of 16-17% for 8 consecutive quarters through mid-2025.
That's impressive consistency.
It really is. It demonstrates a level of earnings resilience that is truly superior to that of a less diversified retailer. The consistent high-margin contribution from the growing parts and service business, combined with the steady profitability of the commercial truck segment and the high-margin F&I business, it has successfully and consistently offset the compression we've seen in vehicle sales margins. It just creates a robust, reliable gross profit stream, smoothing out the bumps.
Let's look at some specifics maybe from the past few quarters to bring this to life. Can you give us some hard numbers from their recent performance that illustrate this point?
Certainly. Let's take Q2 2025 as an example. Their retail auto revenue stood at about $6.5 billion, 6,517.5 mares, with a healthy 17.0% gross margin. The commercial truck revenue contributed a solid $944 million, 943.67, with an estimated 15.9% margin, showing strong contribution from that segment too.
Okay.
And that critical equity income from Penske Transportation Solutions, that hidden gem we talked about, contributed a robust $53.5 million in that same quarter. These figures collectively highlight the consistent, meaningful contribution from each distinct segment. It underpins the overall stability and high quality of their gross margin, even as different parts of the business inevitably face varying market conditions.
How are they managing costs amidst all this flux and normalization in the market? Operational efficiency has got to be key here, especially for a large enterprise like PAG with global operations.
Yeah, and PAG has shown really disciplined and effective cost management, which is frankly a hallmark of strong operational execution. This is clearly evidenced by looking at their selling, general, and administrative SG&A expenses as a percentage of gross profit. That's a crucial metric. It has shown consistent improvement, decreasing by 70 basis points in Q4 2024 and another 30 basis points in Q2 2025, ultimately reaching 69.9%.
So under 70%, that means more of each gross profit dollar is dropping to the bottom line.
Exactly. It demonstrates that the company is effectively leveraging its fixed cost base and managing variable expenses even as gross profit dollars might fluctuate. They're getting more efficient and turning gross profit into operating income.
And the service and parts business seems particularly strong here in terms of contributing to that efficiency. It acts as a powerful lever, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. The fixed cost absorption rate is key here. It measures how much of the dealership's fixed overhead, think rent, utilities, management salaries, the service segment covers with its own gross profit. Think of it like a restaurant. If the kitchen staff and food prep costs, variable, are covered, but you still have to pay the rent, utilities, and manager's salary, fixed costs, you need enough customers buying drinks or high-margin items to cover that too.
Right.
For a dealership, service is like that steady, profitable bar business that keeps the lights on. And for PAG, it's incredibly strong. At an impressive 122% for the commercial truck business in the U.S., it means their service operations are so profitable, they're not just covering all the fixed costs of that entire truck business, they're actually generating extra profit on top of that.
Wow.
For automotive, it improved to a strong 87.5% in Q4 2024. This just underscores the critical role of the service business in sustaining the profitability of the entire enterprise. It allows other parts of the business, like sales, to operate with lower direct cost burdens. It's a powerful shield against the volatility of vehicle sales.
Okay, cash flow. Always key for investors, especially in a dynamic industry that saw such wild swings during and after the pandemic. How has PAG managed its working capital and cash generation during these recent volatile periods?
Right. The period from 2022 to 2024 saw some significant shifts in working capital dynamics, for sure. During the initial semiconductor shortage, inventory levels were abnormally low across the industry. Ironically, this generated substantial operating cash flow for dealerships as they sold down cars without being able to fully replenish them. That was a temporary artificial boost.
Right, selling off assets, basically.
Right, yeah. Then, as supply chains normalized in 2023-2024, inventory levels began to rebuild back towards more normal pre-pandemic levels. This rebuilding became a use of cash and thus a headwind to free cash flow compared to that prior period. They had to spend money to restock the lots. Additionally, higher interest rates since 2022 also increased floor plan financing costs. That's the interest paid on the inventory held by the dealership. That added a notable $21 million in extra expense in Q4 2023 alone. These are significant external pressures.
But despite these pressures rebuilding inventory, higher interest costs, free cash flow generation remained healthy. That indicates strong underlying operational performance and good management focus.
Yes, remarkably so. Despite those headwinds, Pagey generated an estimated $718.3 million in free cash flow in 2023. Now, okay, that was down from an exceptionally high $1.18 billion in 2022, but that decrease was primarily due to higher capital expenditures needed for growth initiatives and acquisitions, plus that working capital normalization we just discussed. However, this level of strong, consistent cash generation, even in a normalization year, is the absolute foundation of their capital allocation strategy. It allows them to reinvest in the business, make those strategic acquisitions, and crucially, return substantial capital to shareholders through dividends and buybacks.
And this earnings beats with revenue misses trend we've sometimes seen in recent quarters, is that just a quirk of the market, or is it actually a deliberate strategy on PEG's part, a reflection of their underlying philosophy?
That's definitely not an accident or just a quirk. It's a clear reflection of a deliberate strategy of prioritizing profitability and earnings quality over sheer top-line revenue volume. A great example of this is the recent realignment of their UK CarShop used vehicle business into Sytner Select. That was a move explicitly designed to retail fewer units, but at better margins and lower operational costs.
Ah, quality over quantity.
Exactly. This clear focus on high-quality, higher-margin earnings, combined with their disciplined cost control and accretive share repurchases, allows them to grow earnings per share even in a relatively flat or moderately declining revenue environment. It highlights management's acute focus on per-share value creation for shareholders, not just chasing revenue growth for its own sake.
Let's move then to how PEG is deploying its considerable capital. Their acquisition strategy seems, as you said, disciplined and highly targeted, which makes sense given their focus on premium brands and strategic diversification.
It is indeed disciplined and highly effective. They focus specifically on acquiring premium and luxury brands in key geographic markets where they already have presence or want to build scale. The goal isn't just to add rooftops, it's to enhance scale, market share, and profitability in segments where they already have a competitive advantage and know-how. Recent transactions powerfully underscore this. In January 2024, they acquired the Rybrook Group in the UK, adding 15 premium dealerships with an estimated $1 billion in annualized revenue. Huge deal.
Yeah.
They also strategically expanded their footprint in Australia with 3 Porsche dealerships and bolstered their ultra-luxury portfolio with that Ferrari dealership in Modena, Italy, right in Ferrari's backyard. Year-to-date in 2024 alone, these acquisitions represent nearly $2 billion in estimated annualized revenue. That demonstrates significant and rapid but strategic expansion.
And they have a specific growth target for this, don't they? It's a clearly stated goal that guides their activity.
Yes. Management aims for approximately 5% growth through acquisitions annually. They specifically target adding about $1.5 billion in additional revenue from these deals each year. Their long history of successful acquisitions and consistently strong operational metrics, like those stable SG&A to gross profit ratios, suggest a well-developed and highly effective integration process. They know how to buy businesses and plug them in. They leverage their existing scale for synergies in areas like back-office support, technology platforms, marketing clout, and F&I product sourcing. This isn't haphazard growth. It's carefully planned, accretive expansion.
Okay, and returning capital to shareholders, that's clearly a major part of PEG's strategy, demonstrating strong confidence in their ongoing cash generation and future prospects.
Well, it's absolutely central to their shareholder value proposition. They have an exceptional and really consistent track record of dividend growth. They've increased their quarterly dividend for an impressive 19 consecutive quarters as of July 2025.
19 quarters in a row.
19 quarters. This consistent growth signals strong confidence from the board of directors in the stability and predictability of the company's future cash flows, even amidst all this industry transformation. Just look at the numbers. The dividend grew from $0.47 per share back in Q1 2022 to $1.32 per share declared for Q3 2025. That represents a compound annual growth rate of over 40% in just a few years. That's a truly remarkable increase.
Yeah, that's huge. And they complement that robust dividend growth with opportunistic share repurchases, right? Which directly benefits shareholders by reducing the number of outstanding shares and boosting earnings per share.
Exactly. They opportunistically repurchase shares to further enhance shareholder value, especially when they believe the stock is attractively priced. In 2023, for instance, they repurchased 2.6 million shares for about $359 million, 358.7 MN. In the first half of 2025 alone, they bought back another 885,000 shares for $133 million. And in May 2025, the board authorized an additional $250 million for repurchases, bringing the total available authorization at that time to nearly $300 million. This strategy directly boosts earnings per share by reducing the share count. The impact is consistently visible in their financial results, where EPS growth often outpaces net income growth, reflecting this commitment to per-share value. Beyond acquisitions, how are they investing in technology to keep pace with evolving consumer behavior and industry trends? It's clearly not just about brick and mortar anymore. The digital realm is critical.
Right.
And they're actively investing to adapt to those changing consumer preferences and the fundamental shift towards digital engagement. Their strategy seems centered on creating a comprehensive omnichannel experience, allowing customers to seamlessly transition between online research and browsing and in-store interactions like test drives or final paperwork. They operate sophisticated customer-facing websites, including their corporate inventory aggregator, which shows cars across multiple dealerships, and the CarShop used vehicle platform in the UK. These platforms enable customers to browse inventory, explore payment options, value their trade-in, and even initiate the entire purchase process online from the comfort of their home if they choose.
And they're not trying to build everything themselves, it sounds like. More of a smart, capital-efficient approach leveraging existing innovation in the tech space.
No, exactly. They have a very capital-efficient strategy of partnering with leading technology providers rather than incurring massive in-house R&D costs and the associated execution risks. A key example is the joint development of the Essential Commerce platform with Cox Automotive. That's a cutting-edge tool designed to facilitate a 100% online automated vehicle transaction, from financing approval right through to digital paperwork completion.
Okay.
Similarly, they partnered with Reynolds & Reynolds, a major dealership software provider, to implement the DocuPad system across their F&I departments. This digitizes and streamlines the closing process, making it faster, more efficient, and more compliant. This bi-partner approach allows them to leverage best-in-class technology without substantial internal development costs and the inherent risks of building everything from scratch in a rapidly evolving tech landscape.
And data. Are they using data analytics to drive decision-making and gain a competitive advantage in this increasingly digital world? That seems crucial now.
Yes. They're increasingly leveraging data to drive decision-making across pretty much every facet of the organization. Sales, service, inventory management, marketing. Internal initiatives and even job postings indicate a strong focus on improving data quality and integrity within their customer relationship management, CRM systems like Salesforce. Ensuring they have accurate, comprehensive customer profiles is step one. They're also investing in and utilizing powerful data visualization tools like Tableau or Power BI to analyze performance metrics, identify emerging trends, and pinpoint strategic opportunities. This allows them to make far more informed decisions about everything from optimizing inventory levels based on demand signals to designing highly targeted marketing campaigns for specific customer segments. It gives them a significant edge.
Okay, so we've covered the business, the industry dynamics, their strategic responses. Now, how do we actually value a company like PAG? Given all these moving parts and the ongoing profound transformation in the automotive sector, it certainly can't be a simple exercise with just one number.
You're absolutely right. A simple, single valuation multiple is indeed insufficient, probably even misleading, for a company as complex and diversified as PAG. When we look at relative valuation compared to its peers, PAG consistently trades at a premium on a price-to-earnings PE basis, often in the 11-12x range, maybe a bit higher sometimes compared to competitors who typically trade more in the 8-11x range. However, on an enterprise value to EBITDA basis, which is often preferred for businesses with varying capital structures and depreciation levels, the multiples are more clustered, generally falling within a 9-12x range for the group.
So why does the market consistently give PAG that PE premium? What specific qualities are being rewarded that make investors apparently willing to pay more for its earnings stream?
Well, the market appears to reward PAG for several factors that collectively suggest a higher quality and greater resilience of earnings. Its strategic focus on the premium luxury segment, as we detailed, provides those higher and notably more stable gross margins, making its revenue streams more predictable. Furthermore, the significant diversification provided by the commercial truck business, which operates on different economic cycles, and critically, the stable high-quality earnings contribution from that Penske Transportation Solutions equity stake, those likely contribute significantly to this premium valuation.
Right.
Investors seem willing to pay more for PAG's less volatile, more diversified, and more predictable earnings stream compared to its more consumer-centric or less diversified peers. It's also worth noting, as you look at the stock chart, the stock reached an all-time high in mid-2025. That suggests the market has perhaps recalibrated its assessment of the company's superior earnings power and resilience in this environment.
You mentioned the sum of the parts SOTP approach earlier as maybe a more insightful way to value PAG. What does that actually entail for a company with such distinct segments? How would you do that?
Right. Given its three distinct and powerful segments, a sum of the parts analysis is a particularly insightful valuation methodology for PAG. It allows you to recognize the unique value drivers and risk profiles of each component. You'd essentially value each segment individually, using appropriate metrics and peer multiples, and then aggregate them to determine an intrinsic value for the entire enterprise before accounting for debt. So for the retail automotive segment, for example, you typically use a peer-based EBITDA multiple, maybe in that 9-11x range we discussed, derived from the average or median of its publicly traded auto retail peers. The retail commercial truck, PTG segment, however, warrants a different multiple, often ranging from 8-14x EBITDA, reflecting its different growth profiles, cyclical drivers within the commercial transportation industry, and those higher fixed cost absorption rates we talked about.
Okay, makes sense. And the Penske Transportation Solutions stake, that significant 28.9% ownership, how do you value a substantial but non-controlling stake in a privately held logistics leader like that? That seems tricky.
Valuing the 28.9% stake in the privately held PTS is indeed more complex, but it's absolutely crucial to a comprehensive SOTP analysis, as it's a significant value driver for PEG. One effective approach is to apply a PE multiple to PEG's reported annual equity earnings from PPS, that chunk of PTS's net income that flows onto PEG's income statement. Now, given that PTS operates in the stable, high-quality logistics and fleet leasing space, which typically commands higher valuations due to its recurring revenue nature and essential service aspects, a multiple higher than PEG's consolidated PE could certainly be justified.
Right, because it's arguably a more stable business.
Exactly. So, for instance, applying maybe a 15-20x multiple to the approximately $200 million in estimated 2024 equity earnings from PTS, that would value this stake alone at somewhere between $3.0 billion and $4.0 billion.
And that's a big chunk of PEG's overall market cap.
It often represents a substantial portion, yeah. So once you have the enterprise values for each segment, retail auto, PTG, and the PTS stake value, you add those together. Then you subtract PEG's consolidated net debt from that combined enterprise value to arrive at an implied equity value for the company. This SOTP-derived equity value can then be compared to the current market capitalization to assess potential undervaluation or overvaluation. It gives you a different lens than just looking at the consolidated multiples.
And beyond the earnings streams and multiples, there are tangible and intangible assets that also provide a kind of floor to PEG's value, acting as an underlying cushion, perhaps.
Yes, absolutely. That's an important point. PEG owns a substantial portfolio of prime real estate for its dealerships and service centers. This isn't just a cost center on the P&L. It's a valuable asset on the balance sheet. The value of dealership real estate has been appreciating significantly in recent years. It climbed 51% between 2014 and recently, reaching an impressive average of $13.9 million per owned location. This provides significant underlying tangible asset value, which is important because it could potentially be monetized through sale leasebacks if needed, or simply appreciates over time as real estate generally does. Furthermore, the franchise rights granted by automotive manufacturers are incredibly valuable intangible assets. They represent the exclusive right to sell and service specific brands in a designated territory. These rights offer durable competitive advantages, barriers to entry, really, and have a quantifiable value in the dealership mergers and acquisitions market. It creates another layer of intrinsic worth that might not be fully captured in earnings multiples alone.
Okay, so every investment has its risks, and given the massive transformation the auto industry is undergoing, what are the primary concerns for PEG that investors or anyone following the company should really keep an eye on?
All right, let's talk risks. First, there are the unavoidable cyclical and macroeconomic risks. As a seller of high-value discretionary goods, cars, and trucks, PEG is inherently sensitive to the health of the global economy. A recession leading to higher unemployment rates and lower consumer confidence would almost certainly hurt vehicle sales across both their auto and commercial truck segments. Furthermore, rising interest rates, like those we've seen recently, increase the cost of floor plan financing for their inventory and make vehicle financing less affordable for consumers and businesses. That directly dampens demand and can impact margins.
And those profound structural shifts we discussed earlier, EVs and new sales models, what specific long-term risks do they pose to PEG's established business model?
Yeah, they lead to significant structural and technological risks. The EV transition, as we've hammered home, poses a fundamental long-term threat to the high-margin service and parts business, which currently generates about half their gross profit. If the reduction in maintenance requirements for EVs is as profound as some predict, a significant long-term decline in this profit stream could permanently impair the company's earnings power. That's the big unknown. Simultaneously, disintermediation from direct-to-consumer DTC models by new EV entrants and the more immediate shift to an agency model by legacy OEMs threaten to compress new vehicle margins and fundamentally reduce the dealer's control over the crucial customer relationship. That could impact future service retention and F&I sales down the line.
What about operational risks? Just the day-to-day challenges of running such a large, complex, and geographically diversified operation.
Operational risks are always present, for sure. PAG's business is heavily dependent on its franchise agreements with the manufacturers, the OEMs. So any adverse changes to these agreements, or maybe an OEM's failure to produce compelling competitive products that consumers want, could harm results significantly. Supply chain disruptions, like the recent semiconductor shortage demonstrated vividly, can curtail vehicle production inventory, directly impacting sales volumes through no fault of the dealer. And while PAG has a strong track record, the risk of failure to successfully integrate newly acquired dealerships is always present. If they stumble on integration, they might fail to achieve expected synergies, and that could be a drag on profitability.
And finally, regulation. That can always be a wild card, right? Introducing unexpected costs or constraints out of the blue?
Indeed. Regulatory risks are definitely something to watch. This could involve potential changes to state franchise laws in the U.S. that might allow for more direct sales by manufacturers, bypassing the dealer network. Stricter emissions standards could increase vehicle costs for consumers, dampening demand, or require expensive upgrades to service facilities. Or the imposition of tariffs on imported vehicles or parts could materially affect the business's cost structure and profitability, especially given PAG's import-heavy brand mix. These are all external factors that require constant monitoring and adaptation.
Okay, so with all those risks clearly laid out, what are the upsides? What are the key opportunities for value creation that could help PAG not just weather these storms, but actually thrive and continue growing in this challenging environment?
There are several compelling key opportunities, I think. First, industry consolidation. We touched on this. The fragmented nature of the automotive retail market provides a really long runway for growth through acquisition. PAG's disciplined approach, focusing on those premium brands in strategic markets, allows it to continue gaining market share and achieving significant economies of scale, especially by acquiring those smaller, maybe less efficient players who are struggling to keep up.
And leveraging their operational strengths, the ones we've seen reflected in their financial performance.
Yes, exactly. Margin expansion and operational efficiency are ongoing opportunities. PAG has demonstrated a strong ability to control costs, as shown by those improving SG&A to gross profit ratios. There's an opportunity to continue leveraging its scale, its shared services model, and its technology investments to drive further efficiencies across its global operations, squeezing out more profit from the existing business. Additionally, that shift to more complex EV repairs, while a threat to routine maintenance frequency, presents a distinct opportunity to capture higher margin service work and potentially take market share from smaller competitors who simply can't afford to invest in the necessary training and equipment. They could become the go-to place for complex EV fixes.
The diversification really comes into play here too, providing multiple avenues for growth and stability that pure-play retailers just don't have.
Absolutely. Diversification benefits are paramount and a core part of the investment thesis here. The commercial truck segment is poised to benefit from long-term freight trends, infrastructure spending, and ongoing fleet replacement cycles. That offers consistent demand potential largely independent of consumer auto sentiment. And the Penske Transportation Solutions investment provides that invaluable exposure to the growing logistics sector, driven by e-commerce and supply chain optimization needs. These offer earning stability and growth potential that are largely independent of the consumer auto cycle, providing crucial balance and resilience to the overall portfolio. It's not just one bet.
And finally, shareholder returns, which have been such a consistent focus and strong performer for PAG.
Right. Shareholder returns are a strong and reliable value driver for PAG. The company's robust free cash flow generation provides the consistent capacity to continue its strong capital return program, both that growing dividend and the opportunistic share repurchases. These actions directly create value for shareholders on a per-share basis, improving yield and boosting earnings per share. And importantly, they signal management's confidence in the long-term cash-generating ability of the business, even through this transformation.
Okay, so ultimately, a company is only as good as its leadership. How do we assess PAG's management team, especially given the founder Roger Penske's long history and continued very visible involvement?
Well, PAG's is led by its founder, chairman, and CEO, Roger S. Penske. He's a highly respected frankly, iconic figure in the transportation industry with a career spanning over five decades. He's seen it all. The senior management team around him is characterized by remarkable long tenure and deep industry experience. These aren't folks who just arrived. This leadership has a proven decades-long track record of successful strategic execution. They've navigated multiple economic cycles, integrated countless acquisitions, and consistently delivered strong shareholder returns. The company's disciplined acquisition strategy, its consistent dividend growth, and its proactive approach to tackling industry disruption. These are direct evidence of a management team focused on long-term sustainable value creation rather than just short-term gains.
And Roger Penske's personal ownership stake is quite remarkable for a public company of this size, isn't it? It's not common to see such a high level of insider ownership.
It's truly a key strength and a powerful signal, I think. Roger Penske holds a substantial portion of the company's shares personally and through affiliated entities. Some sources indicate over 50% beneficial ownership.
Over half.
Yeah. This exceptionally high level of insider ownership ensures strong, undeniable alignment between management and shareholder interests. Their primary motivation is the long-term appreciation of the equity because they own so much of it. Now, okay, recent public filings have shown some insider selling, which always warrants monitoring for any company, just to understand the context. But the overall ownership structure remains a powerful positive factor that speaks to conviction and stewardship. Furthermore, executive compensation at PAC is clearly tied to financial and operating performance metrics, further aligning incentives directly with shareholder value creation.
And the overall corporate governance structure, is it robust enough to provide proper oversight and strategic direction for such a complex, diversified global business?
It appears very well-defined and comprehensive. The board of directors is composed of individuals with diverse backgrounds and extensive experience in relevant fields, automotive, finance, logistics, technology, international business. This diversity ensures a broad range of perspectives are brought to bear. The board has established the standard key committees, audit, nominating and corporate governance, and compensation. And these are composed primarily, or entirely, of independent directors. This structure is designed to oversee critical areas of the company's operations and strategy with a high degree of impartiality. They also maintain a comprehensive code of business conduct and ethics, which outlines a commitment to high standards of integrity and legal compliance across their global organization. It demonstrates a strong, stated commitment to transparency and accountability in all their dealings.
So we've really taken a deep dive into Penske Automotive Group, a company that's clearly far more than just, you know, your average car dealership group. We've seen its powerful diversification across retail auto, that luxury focus, commercial trucks, and that strategic equity stake in logistics with PTS. We've explored how it's not just reacting, but actively adapting and positioning itself amidst these seismic industry shifts like electrification and new sales models. And we've examined how its financial health and strategic capital allocation paint a picture of impressive resilience guided by disciplined and forward-thinking management.
We've also really examined the dual nature of its investment thesis, haven't we? Balancing the high quality and durability of its diversified earnings stream against the significant, profound structural risks transforming the entire automotive retail industry. The central question, I think, for you as the learner, as the curious mind, is whether PEG's current premium valuation truly captures the durability of its operations and its superior execution, or if the market is still perhaps underestimating or maybe appropriately discounting the profound long-term industry challenges that still loom large. It's not a simple answer.
Yeah, it's clear that PEG is not sitting still, though. It's actively adapting through those disciplined strategic acquisitions, maintaining a strong focus on high-margin service, and embracing an omni-channel future where digital and physical blend. They seem to be deliberately building resilience, all while navigating arguably the most profound changes the auto industry has seen in a century.
Which raises, I think, an important final question for you to consider as you reflect on this deep dive. How might PEG's demonstrated ability to successfully leverage complex, high-value EV repairs redefine the traditional dealership's role in the long term? Could it move beyond just sales and simple maintenance? Is the future of auto retail perhaps about becoming these specialized, high-tech service and logistics hubs rather than just transactional sales points? And can PEG, with its unique blend of assets and operational expertise, actually lead that fundamental transformation? Something to ponder.
Definitely something to think about. What stands out to you from this deep dive? We encourage you to reflect on these questions and continue your own exploration of this fascinating company and the rapidly evolving industry it navigates. Until next time, stay curious.